This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to this episode of Over the Influence. It is Sober October, Monday the 3rd of October. If you are dabbling with alcohol-free life, if you've chosen this month to give it a go along with many, many others, and you are already on day three, you'll have done your first weekend, got it under the belt, then absolutely big up yourself. We've got a lot to talk about in this episode, and very shortly we are going to be chatting to one of our favourite people in the alcohol-free world. It's no secret that I'm a huge fan. This man's books are a vital piece in your alcohol-free toolkit. I can remember way back when, 4 years ago now, when I first started out doing this, I read his book and it was an absolute game changer. But before we introduce our guest today, cannot wait for this one, a little bit about us. My name is Sharon Hartley. To cut a very long, well, more than 4 year story short, I am 48 years old. I was a daily drinker, bottle of wine a night and then some, and then used to ramp it up at weekends. I got into my 40s. I've been thinking about this in my 30s as well. It was getting dull. It was repetitive. It was boring. It was the hangover hamster wheel of hell. Decided to take a break from alcohol. As Ben has said in episodes before, quite enjoyed drinking, you know, it was great, this. Never expected it to ever become a permanent thing. Yet here we are 4 years later. And today's guest on the podcast, who I will introduce in just a sec, was pivotal in this all happening. Without your book, this would not have happened. So that's me in a very excited, sweaty nutshell. Ben, how are you? Just say something.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Ben. I'm 34. I live in Liverpool. I'm fiancé to Jem. I've got a baby on the way. In fact, when this podcast comes out, it'll only be a couple of weeks away until I meet my baby boy. You know, it's a boy. Really excited. But Shaz, I was talking to our guest before we started recording, and the last time we spoke to him on the podcast, I was doing my moderation plan. I was doing my 20 in 2020. Yes. Meeting this guest for the first time, then reading the book. We had a kind of a period where we interviewed the guests we've got on today, Andy Ramage, Claire Pooley, all within quite a short period. And it got into my head and I decided then, right, I'm going to give this 3 months. I'm going to give it a go. 3 months completely alcohol free. Forget this moderation thing. Let's just go full on, as you would say, Sharon, full ass. Long story short, 3 months got to the end. And I did fully intend to drink. Like I didn't even want it to be a reset. I just wanted to have the break to say that I'd done the break. Fully intended to drink like I drank before again, but I didn't. I thought, you know what? I'm starting to see some changes. Went to 6 months, went to 12 months. Long story short, William Porter, our world famous alcohol-free Woo-hoo! Guest today. I am now over 2 years alcohol-free. And William, you know, as Shaz said, you're a huge part of that happening for me as well. So it's so great to see you. Thank you for coming
on. Welcome. Congratulations, and thank you for asking me. It's always an auspicious time I come on the podcast there.
It really Absolutely. Is. Yeah. And how does that make you feel, William, when you hear me saying I'm 4 years down the line and your book played a huge part of this at the beginning? Ben is now 2 years down the line, listening to you on the podcast during his strange moderation in 2020 challenge thing. Changed his life as well. I've had various members from podcast listeners also have said, OMG, you've got William Porter on the podcast. Please, can you tell him that he played a massive part in my AF journey as well? How does that make you feel?
It's really surreal, to be honest. It kind of, it's odd because I, as you know, I love like beavering away in the background, kind of working things out, and making sense of it all. And it's odd at times then to lift your head up and realise it's actually having an effect on people's lives all over the world. It's, yeah, it's quite humbling.
And yeah. continues to do so.
Yeah, it seems to be sort of a ongoing success. So yeah, it's fantastic. It's so, I went to sober drinks the other day. Big group of people all sober, and it's amazing meeting people. And actually, because these days a lot of communication is on screens, but it's so nice then to go and actually meet people and speak to people who have quit. It's fantastic, really good. I think there is genuinely a wave of change coming.
We could talk about meeting people in real life, because that's exactly what we've just been doing this weekend, and it's an absolute game changer. I suppose I should officially welcome you to the podcast, William Porter, author of Alcohol Explained 1 and 2. William was on the pod, so it's a couple of years ago now, isn't it, Ben, as we were just saying. Yeah. But the last time we spoke, William, it was 12 months ago, because I joined you for one of your Facebook Lives just as I hit 3 years. Now,
that's right.
It's easy for me to say this now, being a bit further on in my alcohol-free journey. Time starts to speed up, I think, once you get a grip of this. Once you get to a certain point in sobriety, in alcohol-free life, however you want to describe it. I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this thinking, I just want to know how to stop drinking. I just want to know what to do in the early days. What we will do, we will direct people back to that first episode with you, and of course to your books as well. So just search back through the past episodes of Over the Influence, when we talk about that a lot there. I think what we'd really like to do in today's chat, William, is talk about sobriety a bit further on and how life can change in many ways beyond your wildest dreams once you get further into sobriety, and also as well tackling the lows and the lulls that come with it. Some people get to a certain point and they're like, is this it? Should I carry on? Maybe I'm sort of fixed now and I could consider moderating and all that. So I think my point is that it's 12 months since we last spoke. It's brilliant to have you back on the podcast. Time flies when you are having AF fun. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also you kind of transition almost subconsciously from, you know, concentrating on it and paying attention to it, and then you're aware of time passing, to just it becoming a part of your life. And suddenly, you know, great swathes of time start passing. Then I think when you accept it as, this is my life now, I'm never going back to it, you're kind of more looking forward than looking back, counting days. So it certainly feels like time starts to pass a lot quicker at that point.
Do you count days, William? This is a conversation
we've been having. No. You see, so I'm 8 and a half years now. So I wouldn't even, I'd have to sit down with a calculator and work out how many days that was. But no, I don't. I mean, I kind of the mindset, I'm not drinking again. So every year in February, and I remember it being February because it was just after Valentine's Day, so I know it was the 15th of February, I kind of remember it's another year gone by. But no, I don't really count days anymore. I know I think there's sometimes a bit of controversy around it, because sometimes people say counting days is the wrong way to go about it. You shouldn't be counting days, because, you know, you should just make the decision, it's done, I'm not drinking again, and move on. But I think, like a lot of these things, it's what works for the individual. And I think, you know, some people, particularly in the early days, it's incredibly encouraging to think, you know, I've been 2 days, 3 days, whatever. And of course, there are some fairly fixed milestones that, you know, you're going to be making progress over these times anyway. So I think it's worth doing. I think it's what works for the individual. But personally, yeah, I don't count days, or certainly not anymore now when I've got to this stage.
Also as well, talking about counting days, when I first started out, I literally had a calendar and I would cross off number one, number two. And I found it really rewarding to do that. I'd love to know the percentage of people that set out and go, right, that is it. I am never, ever drinking again. I think for many people, they set out to take a break, which was my case. I know this was what happened in Ben's case. And then I think when you get to a certain figure, we sort of say maybe around triple figures, 100 days, something like that, it starts to change. And I had every intention of going back to drinking. I never wanted to be alcohol-free for 4 years. So in many cases, it happens very organically. And things happen that you didn't expect. And then here we are. You know, I would hand on heart now say, 4 years down the line, I'll never drink again. I'd be interested to know what it's like for you, William. At what point did you say, I'm done?
I was a very different drinker to you in that I never drank every day. So I was only ever a binge drinker, but my binges were getting more and more ridiculous. So I think my last one, it was 5 days straight of literally waking up, drinking, collapsing, waking up, drinking, had rung in sick to work, wife and kids had gone. So it was quite extreme. So at that point, I said to myself, I can't keep doing this. I've got to stop. So I kind of knew at that point I'd stopped. So I think the question for me is not so much when I knew I wasn't going to be drinking again. It was more when I said to myself, actually, this is working and I'm much better off. Because when I started doing it, I thought, right, I'm not going to drink again. I expect I'll feel better. But for example, I'll never enjoy social occasions. I don't think I'll particularly enjoy holidays as much as I used to. So I can't remember when it was. I always think a year is kind of a good period. And I'm assuming it must have been about that, because we have these very deeply held beliefs about drinking. And a lot of those are almost the bars to the prison that keep us in that cage. You know, things like, I won't be able to enjoy a holiday. I won't be able to enjoy Christmas. I won't be able to sleep. I won't be able to deal with stress. All of these things. And actually, we learn that they're false by going out there and experiencing it sober and thinking, oh, what? Actually, you know what? I really did enjoy that anyway. So honestly, I can't remember now when it was that my mindset changed from I have to do this to, oh, wow, this is actually really good. And I think what you said, it's true for so many people, because a lot of people think to themselves, well, I'll have a, and I know a lot of people that have stopped originally for a period and then just carried it on, because it's a strange thing, but really there's no comparison between the drinking life and the sober life, because your brain chemistry gets back to normal, you're sleeping better, your fitness increases, your energy levels go up. There's no comparison to it. And I think if you do it in the right way, why on earth would you want to go back to the, you know, the pathetic and lackluster life of a drinker, even a supposed moderate or normal drinker?
William, when I got to a year, that's when I decided that this was going to be long term for me. And I think I was quite objective on it. I looked at it thinking, right, day 366, what have I done in the last year? And I looked at my relationships, I looked at work, I looked at everything. And objectively, if someone else had been looking in at my life, drinker me versus non-drinker me, they'd go, mate, there's no comparison. Come on, you know, there's obvious. At the same time, it has surprised me that even now I'm over 2 years, there are still those moments. And I know we talked about the fading effect bias in the podcast we did with you last time, and you write about it brilliantly, that kind of rose-tinted glasses. You forget all the shit bits about drinking as you get further into your journey. William, why do you see that somebody's been alcohol-free for 5 years, say, and then one day, out the blue, it takes them again, it grabs them again? Is there a kind of scientific explanation for that? Is there something, because you say, you know, brain chemistry returns to normal, so why can you kind of be doing this successfully, doing all the things that we talk about, you know, embracing the energy and the clarity, and then one day, years down the line, it just gets you?
I think there's a few points to say here. I've talked about the false beliefs that we have that kind of form the bars to our prison. Things like, you know, I won't enjoy a holiday without it. I need to relax. I need to socialize. It's a human bonding chemical thing, whatever it is. A lot of people can stop through willpower, kind of force themselves to stop, but retain those beliefs. So while you're doing it that way, you're having to work at it all the time, because every time you go on holiday, you might go on holiday and sit there and wait for the holiday to end, but you're not enjoying it. You're kind of sat there thinking about how much happier you'd be if you were drinking. And I think it obviously it's better to be in that situation to be drinking, but the problem is you're always then vulnerable to going back to it, because it's almost like you're constantly working, and it just takes, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever, to just think this is just too much effort. And of course, the other thing is there's always the moderation myth out there, which is, oh, but all these other people seem to drink, in inverted commas, normally. And probably for most of us, we can remember a time when we could take it or leave it or drink normally. So you start to have these thoughts that, oh, I've stopped, I've had my reset, so now I can go back and drink normally. And these kind of thoughts can be very compelling. And in another way as well, don't forget with drugs, any drugs, we build up this very romantic image of them, of how great they are. If we go back 50 years, you know, you'd see film stars smoking and you'd see these very kind of mysterious pictures of people with cigarettes and they're all clouded in smoke. You don't really see that anymore. We see it for the nonsense it is. But we're not there with alcohol at all. You know, you turn on your TV, films, songs, social media images, people drinking, posting pictures of their drinks, singing about drinking. We're constantly being bombarded with the false image of drinking, the highly romanticized image of drinking. So it is entirely possible, I think, over time, it can actually erode your resolve to stay sober, to remain alcohol free. Because on the one hand, I've escaped from it, I've done with it. And logically, there's an odd psychology here as well, because if we want to stop drinking, we have to resist every single drink. Whereas if you want to moderate, you only have to resist 90% of the drinks. So it's very compelling to think if you can quit, you can moderate. Obviously, there's lots and lots of reasons why that's false, entirely false. But I think it's the mix of these things. It's the mix of being constantly bombarded with this false image of it, starting to lose our fear of being addicted, and just that constant being bombarded with it. And obviously, then the thinking about moderation, I think that's enough to usually tip the scales for people.
It's really interesting. I love the whole moderation debate, because for me, there isn't one. It's that simple, you know. And this is when the penny dropped for me when I first read your book, like 4 years ago, William. I thought you explained it amazingly, and I thought, actually, no, I'm not a screw up. You can't just have one drink. Simple as that. It's just not physically possible. And what frightens me about the whole thought of ever drinking again when you've had such a stint of sobriety under your belt. Not that this is something I think about, because for me, I'm done. That is it. You know, people say, "Well, yeah, just have one. One what? You know, one bottle, one vat of wine. Where do we start?" You know. But when I hear of people that have spent a lot of time with zero alcohol, and I'm talking a few years, and then they dabble again, as you've just said, they're maybe considering themselves fixed, or I'm okay, so now I can do none. I could maybe do a couple. That the slide back down is. In many cases, it's faster and harder than where they were before. And that is a really frightening thought for me.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, the simple fact with it is, with any drug, there is a take it or leave it phase. Okay, when you take an addictive drug, when it leaves your system, it leaves an unpleasant feeling that requires another dose of the drug to get rid of it. Okay, that's true for alcohol, smoking, methamphetamine, cocaine, whatever. But of course, you can take one dose or two doses, whatever, and not become addicted. Now, the reason for that is the addiction doesn't kick in with the withdrawal. The addiction kicks in when the brain, the subconscious brain, starts to realize that unpleasant feeling that builds up when one dose of the drug wears off can be replaced by another dose. That's a learning process. So when you first start, for example, smoking or drinking, you get the withdrawal. It's an unpleasant feeling, But there's lots of reasons why we feel unpleasant in life. You might have an argument with your partner, a bad day at work, you might not have slept properly. It could be a million things. And most of the time when we feel bad, we just get on with it. So in those early stages, the withdrawal is there, but we just don't really think about it. We just get on with things. But when your brain starts to learn that, oh, hang on, I recognize this feeling and I know just how to get rid of it, is to take another drink, have a cigarette, whatever it is. Every time the one dose of the drug wears off, it creates a desire for the next one. So when you finish a drink, it wears off and you want the next one. It creates a desire for the next. Now, that's learned behavior and it cannot be unlearned. So it doesn't matter if you stop for a week, a month, a year, or 50 years. When you have that next drink, it will wear off and your brain will say, oh, I recognize this feeling and I know just how to get rid of it. I want another drink. So when you cross that line, it's incredibly difficult to have an easy relationship with that drug. It just doesn't work that way. And I think the other thing with moderation is, it is really interesting that we only talk about moderating alcohol. No one would say, why don't you moderate your cigarettes? Yeah. Or, I'm hopelessly addicted to methamphetamine. Well, why don't you just try moderating it? Or moderating cocaine or heroin? Why don't we try moderating them? Well, because they're addictive. But you can't moderate something that's addictive. You want more and more of it, not less and less of it. So the very concept of moderating alcohol denies a central truth about alcohol, and that is that it is an addictive substance.
That is mad. I have with all the conversations we've had about moderation, well, you've just said that about moderating every other drug under the sun. It's crazy, isn't it? When you spell it out in really simple terms.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, and of course, the other thing it does, it moderation perpetuates the myth that alcohol is necessary and enjoyable, because why would you want it unless it's necessary and or enjoyable? And the key to quitting is to see it as it really is, i.e. not necessarily and enjoyable. So that's the other, it's always a bit of a catch-22 with moderation, because you're only really safe to moderate if you don't want it, in which case, why would you want to moderate?
We're having a conversation on one of our community Zoom calls about this, about someone who said, they had a decent stint alcohol-free under their belt, and then they were going to see a friend they hadn't seen in years, and they drank for it because it was a special occasion. And then he said, you know what, I'm back here, because they left the community for a few months. And, we did our normal thing. We hope you're okay. We're here if you need us. Please come back, because we love having you a part of what we're doing. But at the same time, you're an adult and you can make your own decisions. But they came back and they said, the reason I came back is because you wouldn't believe how quickly every event became special. He goes, I hadn't been to the football for a while. So suddenly that was a special occasion.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen this person. And I was looking through my phone book thinking, who else can I see? I haven't seen for a while. But it's so true, isn't it? So the brain does just kind of take over. And I think that a lot of people in our community, one of the things they like about it is they join and they go, hang on a sec, this isn't a problem with me. This is a problem with the substance. Other people have had that thing. Other people have had that voice inside their head where events, suddenly every event is special. And it's the substance's fault, isn't it, William? Not the person's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing. It's alcohol that is the problem. And I think when people start to understand it a bit more, because so many people out there are questioning their drinking and thinking, it's me, I'm the problem, because everyone else is fine with it. Most people aren't fine with it. It's really, we have this concept that if only I could drink normally. But I mean, what's a normal drinker? It's really difficult to define them anyway. I mean, in this country, we've got the government who tells us what is a healthy amount of alcohol to drink. And it's, I can't remember what it is, but it's no more than 2 units a day and 6 a week or something. I know lots and lots of drinkers. I don't know a single one of them that drinks within those limits. Now, we're also told by the government that if you drink more, you're substantially impacting your health and quality of life. So most drinkers I know are drinking more than that. Ergo, they are drinking enough to, damage their quality of life and their health, but they still carry on doing it. It's just a massive widespread problem. But because everyone's doing it, it's seen as normal.
Actually, William, I don't think the government are saying that clearly enough. The government are saying, in the UK anyway, the government are saying to us, drink responsibly. Alcohol brands have to have the words drink responsibly on the side. You see the adverts on the TV, drink responsibly or drink aware. Now, for me, And this is something, and William, I don't want to take us off in this direction for too long because I will fill up the rest of this podcast ranting about it. But drink responsibly, for me, that puts the onus on the person, not the substance. That's saying to the person, look, we told you to drink responsibly. Oh, no. Are you in a bit of a tricky situation with alcohol? We did tell you to drink responsibly. But that's all part of this bombardment, isn't it, that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah. It's exactly, exactly. I mean, you wouldn't say on a cigarette packet, you know, smoke responsibly or take this heroin responsibly. It's just, ridiculous, isn't it?
But it is, it's this bombardment. I think that's why I love what we do. You know, I can't remember who said it to us on the podcast, and I really should go back and find it because I've used it a lot without crediting them. If you can see it, you can be it. I love that as a phrase. And I think that's what we do with Over the Influence. It's about joining the Zoom calls, coming on the events so that you can, rather than seeing the cool advertising guy with a bottle of whiskey in his bottom drawer and the, you know, it's a party, which means champagne and Prosecco. Rather than that, you're seeing people climb mountains, be consistent with their exercise, do all these things that they, you know, it's trying to, you can't escape the world and the bombardment that you get from the world around us, but you can start to create a new world around you if you want to, full of, you know, people who are sober and smashing it and everything else. I mean, do you do that now, 8 years in? Do you still surround yourself with, I mean, I know that your work is in this area, so of course there's an element of it, but are you still surrounding yourself with people who are alcohol free? Do you find it important to connect with that, or do you get over that side of things?
I don't think you ever get over it. And I'll just say that the alcohol free movement is growing. So there's more and more you can do with alcohol free people, basically, you know, very different to how it was even 10 years or even 5 years ago. I'm still involved in lots of groups of people who drink. So I do go out regularly with drinkers. But I think what you, and this is sometimes a bit controversial, but I find drinkers intensely irritating. They don't smell very nice. They repeat themselves. They stand too close. They spit on you when they talk. I don't like them.
Good job, they don't smell very nice and they repeat themselves.
No. Yeah, in my drinking days, William, you'd have hated me.
But I think that this is one of the things with it. If we're getting drunk, we don't notice it. So it's not so bad. But when you're not, it's not an attractive thing at all. You know, we think it's very suave and sophisticated, but it isn't really at all. And so I tend to avoid drinkers, frankly. And I know this is something that's caused a bit of controversy. I did a post on Instagram recently, and I think it was something along those lines. And someone had said something like, one of those old things about, oh, but, you know, a couple of glasses of wine is actually good for you and it's really beneficial for socializing. And I couldn't help but go back, because how I see it, there's a false view of alcohol. Okay, and that's the false view that you need it to enjoy yourself. You know, socializing is a bit more fun if you've had a few drinks, it's good for you, it helps you sleep, all of that. It's wrong and it's false. And it's those false beliefs that cause people to struggle with alcohol, because obviously if we have a substance that does all of those things, we want to keep going back to it. And that's, you know, we've spoken about it just now in the podcast. But if you've got something that helps you relax, helps you socialize, tastes good, makes you feel good, all of those things, then yeah, you might quit for a year, 2 years, whatever, but it's only a matter of time before you get sucked back into it because it's pleasurable. And then on the other hand, you have the true version of alcohol. It's a carcinogen. It tastes foul. It makes you feel tired and lethargic and a bit spaced out before giving you a corresponding feeling of anxiety that needs another dose to get rid of it. It ruins your sleep, it increases your heart rate, which makes you feel lethargic and erodes your fitness, as those with empty calories, all of this sort of stuff. Now, if the false view of alcohol is false, why is it so prevalent? And the reason for that is the majority of people drink. They have to have alcohol. If they went to a doctor's probably not going to say you are dependent on alcohol. But they are, to a degree, at least psychologically dependent on it, because they need it in order to fully enjoy socializing, for example. You know, most people drink at social events and they feel like they're missing out if they don't. So these people believe they need it to fully enjoy social occasions. So these are the things that keep us kind of tied up in this prison. But the true version, the reason we adopt, you know, the reason so many people adopt this false view is because it makes them feel more comfortable, because their situation is, I have to have this thing if I'm socializing, otherwise I don't fully enjoy myself. Okay. So how do I want to believe it? Do I want to see it as a carcinogen, or do I want to see it as something healthful and fun and all the rest of it? So of course they have an interest in adopting this benign version of alcohol. But firstly, it's not true. And secondly, it's incredibly damaging for people who are either alcohol dependent or are looking to stop, because they're perpetuating a myth that's causing the problems in the first place. So, you know, I sometimes get accused of being a bit judgmental, but for me, it's not a question of judgment or anything. It's a question of just an objective fact. It's not a pleasant substance. And in calling it out when you see it, you're making a safer space for people who are trying to quit.
I agree with everything you've just said there. But I'll tell you something, it took me a long time, William, to get to that point. You know, it really did, because you are unlearning, in my case, you know, the best part of 30, 35 years worth of drinking, of society, of bombardment. You know, a little example is I spent some time with Ben yesterday, and he gave me a lovely orchid, actually, to say, well done on your 4 years sobriety. And he wanted to buy me a card to say, congratulations. Could he find one without two bloody champagne glasses on the front? No, like, it's not appropriate.
I went to three shops. Three shops. And they were either shit, had alcohol on, or they were shit and had alcohol on. So I had to get you a thank you card.
You got me a thank you card instead, which was beautiful. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, it's a thought that counts.
Absolutely. And it was lovely. But my point is, William, it took me, I'm going to say, 18 months to 2 years to actually see through the shit show that is alcohol and see through everything I thought was true. And actually, when that time comes, if you continue to put the work in, day out, when it gets tough, when people suggest that you're boring, when people say, oh, just have one, keep plowing through, and you will reach a point where you go, hang on a minute, everything I ever believed, it's not true. And one of my most favourite things in the whole wide world is telling people, because I've been there and done that. William, I was so scared about socialising. I was so scared about not being funny anymore, about not having a laugh, about going on holiday. The opposite is true. Your nights out become better because you can cherry pick the best bits. Your holidays are glorious for every reason under the sun. Laughter, when you are not absolutely up to your neck in rosé, it's beautiful, it's glorious. And I just want people to know that, my God, there is another way. And it's so, so good. But it can take a bit of time, can't it, to get to that point?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, hopefully what Alcohol Explained does is it gives people the, you know, the science and common sense version of alcohol, which helps to start stripping away that, you know what, maybe I can enjoy a holiday without drinking, maybe I can enjoy socializing. But humans learn, one, academically, and two, through experience. It's almost like you do your preparation, then you put it into practice. And I think everyone's a bit different. Some people are quite academic and they'll get 90% of where they need to be on the, you know, on the reading, the background work, and then the 10% on the practical application. And other people, it's the other way around. But what you've described is exactly that. You know, you do the work, you get out there, and it's all very well me explaining how, of course, you can have a good time on holiday or socializing, not drinking, and hopefully that'll give you the courage to get there. But there's nothing like putting it into practice, actually going out, because it is weird, isn't it? You spend 25, 30 years not having gone out without drinking. And it just becomes this massive thing. And you think, oh my God, you know, how is it even? You think you're going to go there and order a soft drink and the whole world's going to stop turning. But of course it doesn't. Everything carries on as normal. And you know, eventually you'll lose yourself in a conversation. If there's someone there you like and you're getting on with, you'll start laughing and chatting to them. And suddenly, oh, wow, I'm actually enjoying myself and I didn't have a drink. And of course, the more you do it, the more you build your confidence up, the more you relax. So it does take time. It takes time and practice, like anything. You know, you're learning new skills and it takes time to put it together. But it's so worth it when you get there.
Okay, we're just going to take... Well, it's going to be a really quick break, actually, from this episode with the one and only William Porter, because, honestly, I can't get enough of William Porter. And every time I speak to him, it sounds ridiculous. You know, like when you meet a pop star, like when I met Matt Goss. It's on Zoom, by the way, not in real life. It's a bit like that. But in the case of William, he's got the potential to change your life. And he certainly changed mine just by reading his book. And you know what? The one thing that we do here, the one thing we talk about, and Ben says this time again, time and time and time again, you don't need a rock bottom to reassess your relationship with alcohol. You could just be a couple of glasses of wine at a weekend, whatever it might be. Try alcohol-free life. It is an absolute game changer. Our community is packed with people like you who might be thinking, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I believe what these two are wanging on about, how amazing sobriety is. Give yourself a chance. Give yourself a break. And never mind just me and Ben going on about it. Take a look at our website. Look at the stories that are being shared by our community members. Some of them, Ben, they came into this community, didn't they? Like 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 18 months ago. And they were like, I daren't dip my big toe into the waters of sobriety. And Kel Surprise, guess what happened? Okay, it's not that simple overnight. They are loving it. So many success stories to share. So much positivity coming out from making that one decision to remove just one thing from your life. Take a look at our socials. Have a look at the read section on our website. Hear from our community members. Who else best to say it than the people that are involved in Over the Influence?
Yeah, and we're doing this because it is Sober October, and all through the month we're going to be highlighting people's stories. And it's because, like, we've got lots of things that we say with Over the Influence. You know, you don't have to have a rock bottom to decide to rethink your drinking. You give up one thing, you gain so much more. Adventure awaits. That's a new one I want to start getting in there, Shaz, by the way. Adventure awaits.
I like that.
Yes. But also, one that really, I can't remember who said it. It was a podcast guest, but if you can see it, you can be it. And I love that. It's so true and that's so powerful. And what I love about our community is that it's not a load of people who are all starting at the same time. We've got newbies in there who are just trying alcohol-free life. One of our members is over 8 years alcohol-free and really active in the community. I think it's really important that it's a huge part of why Over the Influence is the place that it is. And it is, it's different. It's that if you can see it, you can be it. So if you don't follow us at Alcohol Free Pod on Instagram, then make sure you're following, because we're posting member stories all the way through Sober October. If you haven't gone to our read section on the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk, click read at the top. And yeah, have a look, because we're going to be posting loads of member stories every other day. I think we're doing it through Sober October. Shaz, we said this was going to be short. It's ended up being very long because we're very passionate about alcohol-free life. Shall we get back to your fave,
please.
William Porter?
Yes, please. More William, please. Okay. Thank you kindly.
Here we go.
There was one bit in your book. Sorry, Ben. I know you want to jump in and I can't stop wanging on. I'm sorry. It's just me and my mate, William. Deal with it.
See you right.
There's one bit in your book, William. Well, there's many bits where the penny dropped for me. And you were talking about socialising. And you spoke about those first 15, 20 minutes. So in the past, when you would have had that glass of wine or whatever, and you feel the endorphins and you feel, oh, this is all going to be okay. Remove that. Still go to the event, so you don't have your drink, you have whatever it is you're drinking, your soft drink or your AF alternative. And when you meet your mates and when you do start chatting, oh, hang on a minute, I'm still feeling that buzz and them endorphins, and it's because you're meeting your mates and having a nice time, and it's because you want to be there. And I'm like, it's not the booze. It's actually a natural buzz. And I was like, yes, William, you're talking to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because we drink at social events, we link the feel-good feeling we get with the alcohol. But the feel-good feeling isn't with the alcohol. And it's an amazing experiment, not to be done if you've stopped drinking, of course, but to have a drink alone with no music, no TV, no nothing, and just really concentrate on it, because it's not that pleasant a feeling. It's the strangest thing that because we've linked alcohol with socialising, we get sucked into this whole thing of believing that it's the alcohol that's making you feel good. But the interesting thing with the endorphins is when you're not drinking, that endorphin high lasts the entire evening. But when you're drinking, because the alcohol of one drink wears off and causes an unpleasant feeling, you need to have another and another and another. And in doing that, you become increasingly intoxicated. You actually anesthetize the endorphins anyway, which is why if you have a social event where everyone's sober, that chatty, laughy atmosphere lasts for the entire event. But when you have people drinking heavily at a social occasion, it starts off happy and chatty, and it very soon the mood starts to plummet after an hour or so. And that's when people start to get aggressive and unpleasant. So, you know, the myth that drinking is borrowing happiness from tomorrow is nonsense as well, because it isn't. You're actually ruining the night out anyway.
Oh, could talk about this for ages. Ben, you can please get a word in. SARS.
Well, no, I'm glad that it's taken me a while, because I think I've got quite a big question here. And William,
oh, here we go.
You might say, oh, I don't want to get into that, mate. We haven't got long enough to get into that. My question is, why is it on us, individuals, you as someone who's written a book, me and Shaz as people who set up a podcast and now a community, why is it on us as the individuals to carry this mantle that you can have a better life without alcohol? Because over the influence, we don't see giving up alcohol as a challenge. And we talked about days at the beginning. I don't think I said it when we were chatting earlier on. I think counting days is really good at the beginning. And it did get me through. I didn't do days, but I said I wanted to hit 3 months. And in month two, you know, there's a few, especially when you get over that initial kind of buzz of it. There were a few days where the only reason I carried on not drinking was because I said I was going to do 3 months, that kind of accountability. So I think that's where days really count. But it's not about the days, it's about what you do with those days, isn't it? And it's not a days competition. What we want to do is to talk to people exactly about what you were saying earlier about surrounded with the false beliefs thing, is that actually don't leave the door open for alcohol. When you fully go for it and turn that kind of the noise off in your head and you go, I am a non-drinker, and you go into the lifestyle of it, it can be wonderful. But then you're bombarded with these messages that alcohol's cool and that alcohol's fun and that everyone's doing it apart from you. It doesn't feel like the people in power care about this. They're wheeling suitcases of wine into Downing Street during lockdown, which I know is not the current administration, but it's got the same colour above the door. You know,
yeah.
Why do the people in power not care? Because, you know, let's liken it to smoking again. You've just written This Naked Mind, Nicotine with Annie Grace. Smoking, again, that book will help thousands of individuals, if not more than that. Tens of thousands, millions of people, millions of individuals across the world. But actually with smoking, the real kind of wide scale change happened when cigarettes are now being sold in plain packaging. When there's kind of legal... what's the word I'm looking for here? Institutionalized change. Legislation.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's when the kind of the wide scale change happens, when it's legislated against, or, you know, you raise the smoking age, or do you disagree with that? I think, why is it on us, and why are the people in power not helping us more? Because that's what we vote them in to do. We vote them in to protect us and to educate us on things that we don't know about.
Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting points there. I think one of the problems is... lots of people think they've got an answer. And for people in power, there's a lot of people knocking on their door saying, I have a simple solution to this problem. Okay, so I think, to be fair to them, they probably have a lot of people saying, I can help, I can change things. And it's probably difficult to know who can and who can't. I think what you said about the legislation is interesting. I think it's true up to a point, but let's not forget the... lessons of prohibition. So America bans alcohol, everyone carries on drinking, and you just give loads and loads of power to the gangsters because suddenly they can make lots and lots of money and become very powerful. It causes widespread disrespect for the law because, you know, I'm going to ignore the law and drink, so I'll ignore the law and do all these other different things. And at the end of the day, if you're going to make a law, you have to have the power and resources to enforce it. So I think when you're starting off with a country of 80 million people, of which I can't remember what it is, but it's 80-90% of them drink, bringing in changes to prohibit or try and cut down on the amount of alcohol available, you're kind of pushing into prohibition territory. Where are you just going to get loads of smuggled alcohol? And I've seen stuff in the news over the last few years where they've had smuggled vodka or something, and it was causing people to lose their eyesight and become incredibly ill. So you've got additional issues with that anyway. So it is, yeah, no, I completely take what you're saying. But I think what we need to bear in mind is that the changes came with smoking. I think less with the legislation, from my, and again, this is just my view on it, and more to do with when society started to see it realistically. Because 50 years ago, it was seen as really sociable to smoke. You know, you went to a social event, you passed cigarettes around. It was something you did with other people. It relaxed people. It was seen as a pleasant thing, as long as you didn't overdo it and get addicted to it, which is ridiculous, because now we know the only pleasure in smoking is the nicotine. It's the actual addiction side of it that is the only pleasure. But the thing with smoking is it is incredibly bad for you. It doesn't have any benefits whatsoever. And these are very simple facts about it. And over the last 50 years or so, society as a whole has started to appreciate those facts. So nowadays, the vast majority of people realize that smoking is bad for them. There's very little going for it. So it's being pushed more and more to the periphery. And I think we're riding the wave at the moment of a similar thing happening with alcohol. So I think what you're doing and what I'm doing is kind of evidence of that and adding to it, where people are starting to wake up and think, you know, this drug is not all it's cracked up to be. It's, you know, it doesn't do much for us at all. If anything, it's got these massive downsides, and it's essentially a con that we need it to enjoy ourselves. So I do take your point, and I think there's a lot to be said about it, but I think the real change will come when society itself starts to change its view. Because I think I've seen a lot in the newspapers as well about, you know, do we bring in minimum pricing and, you know, lowering the strength of certain drinks? And the problem is you've got one group of people saying, let's increase the cost of, you know, the price of alcohol, and then a massive backlash of people saying, no, you shouldn't do that. Now, the less and less people that say you shouldn't do that, the more and more chances you've got of getting that legislation through.
The thing about, and this is a slight tangent, but minimum pricing, for example, in Ireland, the thing about the minimum pricing there is that it was, because, you know, the concept of minimum pricing is that per unit of alcohol, how strong the alcohol is, you can't charge less than X. The problem is, the people who are benefiting from that, it wasn't like the extra money you pay for that bottle of vodka goes to alcohol support services. The extra money you pay for that bottle of vodka goes to Mr. Smirnoff and Mr. whoever else makes vodka. So it's actually benefiting the manufacturers. And when you start digging into stuff like that, you go, that's absolutely bonkers. How has that been allowed to happen? If you're going to do this thing of putting in minimum pricing, and look, there are all sorts of arguments about, you know, people, if you can't afford the minimum pricing, but you still need alcohol, then you will go and find it in other ways, and it could increase violent crime, it could increase robberies, it could increase whatever else. And I get that. But the fact that it's just an obvious thing, isn't it? That if you increase the pricing, then the money, extra money you raise goes to support services. And I can't believe that that didn't happen. I totally get your point about prohibition in America. At the same time, what happened in this country anyway is it was legislated around the edges, and it was kind of boxed in. You can't smoke inside anymore. And I remember being there. I was in the club when they, in Birmingham, a basement club called Snobs in Birmingham, when the smoking ban came in. And the first thing everyone did in the club was light a cigarette. And, you know, we were all smoking inside there. But obviously that the smoking ban came in. And then actually the government went on the bombardment, if we're using that word again, because they put it on packaging, smoking kills, and it started to give stats. And they went on the kind of anti-bombardment of, look, you're still going to buy these cigarettes, but we're going to label them, and then we're going to take it another step further. Bit by bit, they're now behind, you can't see them on show anywhere in shops. And when you can see them, it tells you exactly how dangerous they are. That doesn't seem to be happening with alcohol. And I think that it's not necessarily with the smoking thing. It's not about stopping smokers from smoking necessarily. If you're addicted to smoking, as we know, with anything you're addicted to, and everything that you do, your whole life's work, William, is it's incredibly difficult, but it can be done. But it's not necessarily about stopping current smokers from smoking. It's about stopping the next generation from smoking. Why isn't this happening with alcohol?
Yeah, again, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Just a slight tangent there, but did you hear what New Zealand did with their smoking laws? I can't remember the age, but if you're born after a certain age, you cannot buy tobacco, which is such a clever way of doing it. to be honest, I'm not necessarily an expert in the whole, you know, the economics of drinking and the finances of it. I mean, obviously, there's an awful lot of tax on alcohol that goes into government coffers as well. I think the point as well, very well made, with the fact that, you know, the extra money is actually going to the alcohol industry, which is no doubt spending a handsome percentage of that on marketing in the first place, which is how people get into difficulties. I saw a breakdown once of the amount of profit the alcohol industry gets from alcohol dependent people. So it basically, it broke down their profit between, you know, very light drinkers, medium drinkers and heavy drinkers. And I forget what it was, but it was the heavy drinkers that were bringing in, as you would expect, by far the biggest percentage. So it's a complete nonsense for them to put drink responsibly on their product, apart from anything else, because if people did drink responsibly, they would lose out massively on a significant amount of their profits.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go off. I mean, it happens. And I don't want to put
quite regularly with Ben Williams.
More and more, unfortunately, these days. And I don't want to put you in a position as well, William, to be talking about, well, why the government doing it? I know that you are not the Prime Minister. One day, maybe. Yeah.
William, no, for PM.
I think what you've done for so many people is that you've taken the bullshit away from it, and you've gone, this is what it does to you, and this is how it works. And like Sharon said earlier, when you suddenly, these false beliefs around alcohol, when you do start stripping them away, you suddenly start to see. And I think it's fabulous that, you know, that we're doing this with Over the Influence, and that you're writing these fabulous books, and that so many people around the world are benefiting from this. It just makes me angry when I see things like the Japanese government trying to encourage young people to drink because they're not getting enough tax revenue from, which happened over the summer. And stuff like that kind of makes me go, and I've voiced this to Sharon, it makes me go, what's the bloody point of us getting together every week and getting a podcast out? What's the point? And do you ever feel like that?
No, because I think I maybe be a bit of a pessimist, but there's so much wrong in the world. Okay, there's so many things you can look and you can say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And I think you can drown in it if you take it too much to heart. So what I think you need to do is to look at your little area where you can make a difference, and you do what you can to make that difference. I remember hearing this, it infuriated me at the time. It was one of those really stupid, irritating things I have to go to at work, go to these courses. And it was this pathetic story about this man walking up the beach, and he's walking up the beach, and a load of, for miles and miles, starfish have been washed up on the beach. So they're all dying on the beach. And he sees this other chap a bit further up picking starfish up and throwing them back in the sea. And he goes up to him and he says, what on earth are you doing? You can't make a difference. There's miles of beach. There's hundreds of thousands of starfish. It's not going to make any difference. And this chap picks up a starfish and throws it in the water and says, well, it made a difference to that one. And I think that's what you need to do. You can't be looking at all the things you can't change. You just need to look at, you know, however many people are listening to this podcast, and you know that it's making a difference and they're choosing a better life. And for every one person who does that, it's worthwhile. And that's all you can keep doing. And I think that's, you know, all you can do. There's so much out there otherwise. And as I say, you end up just drowning in misery otherwise.
I love having William on the podcast. I'm not sure he'll come back on after my tirade over the last 20 minutes. But it actually gives me a real sense of calm just listening to that last minute.
Just his voice. William is very calming. Yeah. Very calming.
Shaz, you've apologised for talking too much. I definitely need to apologise for talking too much now. So please, over to you.
A bit of a turnaround on this episode, Ben. William, it's no secret that I'm probably your number one fan.
Probably.
Just below you in the AF world, comes in quite a close second is Annie Grace. And you two have been doing a bit of a project together, which sounds like an absolute match made in heaven. What's that all about, William, before you go?
So this is This Naked Mind Nicotine. So this is a new book we've collaborated on. And it's, the idea is we combine our approaches and apply them to nicotine. So that is coming out on the 27th of September. So we're really close now to that being launched.
That's exciting. Do you touch on, is it purely nicotine, or are there any crossovers with people's relationship with alcohol and nicotine, or remove one and you get into another addiction?
It's purely nicotine, but as you probably gathered with alcohol explained, there's a lot of addiction. Okay, there's some very specific parts to each different drug, but there's also some overriding principles. So I'm hoping it's interesting and useful for people who, you know, don't smoke or vape or never been addicted to nicotine, because I think there's a massive crossover with just addiction generally, and I'm hoping some of the principles there will be useful for people anyway. But no, the book's purely about smoking and nicotine addiction.
I don't book the guests on this podcast. Sharon handles our guest diary. But William, you always come into my life at the right time, because it's the vape for me now. That's the thing I've got to kick next. And I've been talking about that for so long. So I need to read it. I need to get it. Is it the 27th of September, you said?
27th of September, okay. It's out. Yeah, yeah.
Because I've been promising our community members for months that I'm going to get off this vape. But I've got the baby arriving soon. I really want to do it. I feel like it's a pointless activity. It's better than smoking 20 cigarettes a day, and it's definitely cheaper, but it's still not good for me. So you've come once again into my life at the right time. And I can having interviewed Annie as well on this podcast, because she went and, you know, did a load of research herself. That's where this Naked Mind came from, isn't it? And it's the same with you. Mm. You know, you did a load of the research yourself and then shared it with the world. So I can totally see how this collaboration's come together. It's lovely to see the two powerhouses of the alcohol-free world coming together to tackle smoking once
You'll
and for all.
You'll have to read that and let me know what you think of it. Let me know how you get on.
One of our community members has just put in the chat box, that's live and it's been recorded. No backing out now, Ben. There you go.
We'll have to invite William back for an update, and we'll book you for a 2-hour chat, William, next time, because it goes too fast.
And I won't come. Sorry.
You know what I was going to say? Do it for a year and we can celebrate your first year nicotine free.
Yes.
That could be great.
Yeah, and then it'll be my 5-year soberversary.
It will, won't it? Yeah, yeah. It'll be
just ridiculous because, we seem to catch up every year, William. And every time we do, you know what? We learn something new, and it's just great. Honestly, it's so, so good. Thank you so much for your time. And I think I said this last time I spoke to you, in true fangirl style. I'm just so glad that I got your book in the really early days, because I'm not entirely sure I'd be here today, 4 years alcohol-free without it. Thank you. And thank you for being just so approachable and just so friendly. Like, before we came on the podcast, I said to my husband, I'm like, I've just woken up, I'm late, it's bloody William Porter at 6 o'clock. He's like, who's William Porter? I'd say who William Porter is, and I go off on this big tirade. So he's actually now, he's my friend. Which makes me sound a bit untapped. Sorry.
That's a nice awkward way to end the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, that was it.
William, thank you so much. And we'll see you next year.
My pleasure. Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
You okay, love?
I really enjoyed that. Did I make an absolute plank of myself as per?
No. I think I did this episode, actually. I think sometimes I get a bit carried away, and it just makes me cross some of the stuff.
I know.
You know. Especially when you remove alcohol, you look back and you just see life through a different lens. And I don't know. I just get a bit. So hopefully it's not the kind of conversation William normally has, I don't think.
I think every time he comes in over the influence, I think he leaves feeling like he's been, I don't know, hit by a freight train.
Yeah, clubbed around the head a few times. You know what? We'll know if he enjoyed the conversation or not, because in the kind of email discussions in the run-up to getting William on today, we're going to go and have a talk to him on his live, aren't we, at some point?
Yes, we are.
Is it on YouTube he does them? It's not Facebook, is it? He does YouTube lives.
So he's got his YouTube, and he did do some Friday night Facebook lives, but I think he might have taken a hiatus with that. But and again, you know, when you talk about the possibilities that sobriety can bring, some people don't even like using the term sober. You think about the possibilities that can happen if you just make a decision not to drink. I could never have imagined in around a squillion years that this guy's book that I read, you know, in September 2018 by this chap called William Porter, well, number one, it'd end up changing my life. And number two, he'd end up actually becoming a friend.
Well, yeah, we'll find out how...
Is that a one-way street, friend?
We'll find out if William shares that sentiment, if he does invite us on these lives like he said he would. So we'll find out. Or we've just massively put him off. Look, having said that, I think it's really interesting that we've had this conversation today with William. It's Sober October. And I think, you know, we want to help the individual. Of course we do. To remove alcohol and live their very best lives, because you give up one thing and you gain so much more. But also, you know, we do want to open up the conversation about alcohol and society in general. We think it's important. We feel really passionately. We don't think that people who drink are evil. We don't think alcohol is evil. There are some things that we don't agree with. And I think it's important that people have the information,
yeah,
you know,
and then make
to be able
choice.
To choose. Yeah, because at the moment, unfortunately, society is so geared up towards drinking. It is so acceptable and so accessible that it's almost, it feels inescapable at times. Mm. But you can choose to live life a different way. You absolutely can. It doesn't make you weird. It doesn't make you
boring,
yeah,
miserable.
Yeah.
I want you a dick for not drinking, etc., yeah, etc. It's actually, no, Ben, it's the polar opposite. Craig Beck nailed it for me. Another fabulous guest we have had on the pod when he talked about falling in love with sobriety.
Yes. And it's true.
That's what happened with me. That's what's happened. And it's the best thing ever. And also, while we're on a bit of a mega rant.
We haven't got much longer
no,
left.
No, we need to wrap this up and fast. Keep saying, we're only going to be brave. We lie.
Speak
we
really
lie
quickly.
All the
speak
time.
Really quickly.
I just want to direct you, if you're considering sobriety, if you are sober curious, if you're thinking, is it worth joining this flipping community that they keep going on about? It doesn't matter what we say. We're not here to convince you. I would love you just to go back and listen to our special episode that we did with some OTI adventurers. It was to do with the Snowdon weekend, a weekend that took place a few weeks ago. Absolutely brilliant. But in that podcast, we don't just talk about what actually happened that weekend and the things people achieved. The four guests we had on that podcast told us really honestly how this community had massively impacted their lives and really, really helped them change their relationship with alcohol. Again, all at various different stages. I think actually what's interesting is the four of them are probably below 12 months alcohol free, you know, some are 3, 6, 9, that sort of length of time. If you don't want to listen to myself and Ben wanging on, that's absolutely fine. Take a listen to the community members, because you'll hear it from the horse's mouth. And it's a brilliant, brilliant episode.
Absolutely. Right, Shaz, we need to wrap it up. Goodbye.
And can I keep talking about sobriety?
See, that's how you do it quickly. That's how you do it quickly.
But I just want to...
We've got to go
so
now.
Much
bye.
Else to say.
We can say it
fine
next week, because obviously we're here every week for the rest of time. Thank you for listening to Over the Influence. Goodbye.